Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, waging the Truth Jihad, bringing on great guests, talking about all the issues that you're not supposed to talk about in polite company, even in the mainstream media. Today, we're going to bring up a hot-button issue that hardly ever gets covered, even in the alternative media, and that is electronic harassment, gang stalking. It's a scary issue. And if you talk about it, they're going to say that you're wearing a tinfoil hat. They're going to come after you. And that kind of suggests to me that, you know, whenever you're not supposed to talk about something, and when you do talk about it, you get the usual insults from the usual suspects, that means that maybe that's a subject that needs to be talked about. And that's the assumption I'm bringing into today's interview. I'm going to be talking to Peter Mooring. Peter is with the Covert Harassment Conference, which will be taking place in Berlin, coming up in about a month. I intend to be there. Now, Peter has a degree in electrical engineering and computer architecture from Delft University of Technology in the Netherlands. He's a founder of the Stop EG Foundation. That's on the web at stopeg.com. And he's an organizer of the Covert Harassment Conference. You can find out about that at where else? covertharassmentconference.com. It's all run together. And let's hear what it's going to be all about. Welcome, Peter Mooring. How are you?
Welcome, Kevin. Thank you for having me on your program. And I want to thank you, start by thanking you to say that I'm very happy that you will be coming to Berlin to do media cover of the event, but also to speak at the conference. And you have really a fascinating title for your speech, for your presentation. So thank you, Kevin.
Well, you're quite welcome, and thank you for inviting me. It's not a topic I have really worked on much in the past. I had one interview with a dissident psychiatrist named Seth Farber, who has patients who have reported some horrific forms of this gang stalking electronic harassment. And after doing some investigations, Seth concluded that these people were not just paranoid. They were not, you know, garden variety paranoids. They were actually being harassed. One of these people actually, it turns out, had a bunch of microchips implanted in him. So I think these kinds of topics tend to make people uneasy. They tend to bring the folks out of the woodwork who say, oh, you can't talk about this or that because you're a conspiracy theorist. That's how they try to shut us up about things like the Holocaust, 9/11, all of these really deep emotional issues that probably really do need to be discussed.
Kevin. Are you there?
Yes. I'm sorry. Did we lose you? Hello, Peter. Can you hear me? Looks like we're having some electronic harassment.
Kevin?
Yes.
Well, if this keeps happening, we'll just stitch the show together in bits and pieces.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You think we're getting electronic harassment right now?
Yeah.
Is this something that often happens to you during radio interviews?
Yeah, well, it happens with phone calls and with Skype calls, yeah. But the last few times, it didn't happen, so, okay. Let's just continue.
Let's just continue. If we get cut off, we'll just start, I'll stitch it all together, editing it into a seamless radio show. Okay. It's interesting, you know. I've had a few strange occurrences that, you know, appear to be some kind of weird electronic harassment of my radio shows. When I had physicist Stephen Jones on my show, it was the first show I ever did with No Lies Radio. I was doing it via telephone from my basement. And just at the exact moment when that show began, my telephone line went down. And it went completely down. It was dead. It was dead for a couple of days. And when they fixed it, they said that it must have been a lightning strike that left static electricity in the phone system in the area. And that right at the exact second that I began my first ever No Lies Radio show with physicist Stephen Jones, that happened to be the moment that the static electricity chose to discharge and take down my telephone line.
So yeah, many things appear coincidence, and sometimes, of course, it is a coincidence. So you should not get paranoid. But I think many people are watched, and some are watched just a few moments, and others are watched a few hours, and others are watched 24 hours a day. So Yeah, there certainly will be sometimes interfering with what you do, because you're also a very person who very much talks about the truth. And but of course, they know they cannot do this all the time, because then it gets suspicious.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I figure that it must all be deniable. But, you know, this kind of stuff that you're looking into is so extreme. You know, some of these people apparently, you know, if they're telling the truth, if their picture is accurate, you know, they're really being brutally mistreated with these kinds of weapons. Is it mostly just experimentation, or are they actually using this stuff on dissidents or people that they want to take out?
Yeah, you have, of course, different groups of people. You have the whistleblowers and the activists, people who are opposed to certain companies, big companies, hackers who hack into certain systems and show that the security is totally useless, like hacking into a pacemaker, for example. So that's a group of people who is certainly targeted. Most of these people, I think they will experience certain things at a certain time, but their lives really are, well, you can say, destroyed in such a way that they are made financially broke, so they cannot have any finance. So that makes it very difficult for them to start activism, to do new activism. And then you have this other group of people that is just, they call it the targeted individuals. These are the people who are really experimented upon. All these new high-tech weapon systems must be developed, and yeah, you need real people to test them on. So, and that's really horrific, yeah.
And it, you know, people who are skeptical about this, I think, really should use some common sense, because throughout all of history, weapons makers have made the weapons that they could make, given the technology at the time. And today, given the various kinds of new technologies that are out there, you would really have to have your head in the sand to not think that they're being weaponized. You know, I remember being at a Renaissance fair many years ago, well, maybe 8 years ago, I think it was. I spent one summer selling Moroccan food with my wife at various festivals and carnivals. And one of them was the Renaissance Fair, where people dress up as various medieval characters. And one guy there was the weapons maker. And so he actually knew how to make swords and spears and daggers and medieval weapons in general. But he was also interested in just weapons making. And he described to me how he could make, and maybe for all I know he did, a microwave weapon out of an ordinary microwave oven that you could purchase at a secondhand shop like Goodwill here in the States for a few dollars. And you could turn that into a weapon that would badly injure or kill someone without their knowledge, and he could do it very quickly and very easily. So I think people who try to rule this out a priori are making a big mistake. The common sense position would be that, of course, this is going on. The only question is precisely who's doing it, what are they doing, and how can we get some transparency into this part of the world so that the abuses can be minimized?
Yeah, it's an extremely difficult problem, because all governments in the world are developing these weapons, this new generation of weapons. They are based on radio waves. So you have microwave, ultrasound, very low frequency. But to say they only say they're using it, well, we'll be using it in wars. And so the U.S. military has introduced this active denial system, which can scare people away. But they also introduced these laser weapons on their boats and into their aircraft. But no one says that they're actually using these weapons also on people. And it's very easy. I mean, a microwave, well, you cannot put your hand into a microwave. It's you can make it a very horrible weapon. And it's true what you say. There have been many videos on the internet of turning your microwave oven into a microwave weapon. Most have been removed. But it's really easy. I mean, you just can open the door and make it continue, and then put it to the wall of your apartment where some other people are sleeping, and you attack these people. And don't try this at home, folks.
After
25% of this microwave are going through the wall, and after some time, these people may have serious headache problems, or if they sleep with their feet to the wall, they may go to the doctor and complain that they hardly can walk anymore. And that's just a very simple example.
Right. Yeah, that's it's very troubling that, you know, that in so many ways, technology, which we're taught is always improving our lives, in some ways is creating problems that we would be better off without.
These weapons are really very high tech, and they're also very hidden. I mean, in the 70s, the 60s, 70s, the Russians developed, that's called the LIDA machine, L-I-D-A, LIDA machine. And that was a device, a box, not too big in size. And you could aim it at a person, and that person would fall asleep immediately. Yeah? And then the Americans bought one, and they tested it, and they came to the same conclusions. But after that, no one ever heard of this weapon anymore, of this technology anymore, and there's really not much to find on the internet, but I can assure you that this weapon is very active and very much used in the world.
Sounds like a great cure for insomnia.
It's fantastic if you can make people instantly fall asleep, and I'm sure, for example, that many car accidents have been created with it.
Right. You know, I've discussed this kind of thing a little bit with the Veterans Today editor, Gordon Duff. You know, I'm an editor there. And, you know, he's quite interested in weaponry. He's a gunsmith and so on. And, it's very real. I mean, there is a world out there where people are doing these things. How did you get interested in this?
Well, I got interested in this because I became a target myself. I worked at, I was asked to work for a company that was a startup IT company. It should do outsourcing for the IT infrastructure of other companies. And I worked there for about 1 year, and I left there, and I don't think people liked it that I left. And from that moment on, my life changed totally. I bounced, people on the street came to me, standing in front of me, and they said to me in my face, "I will never work again." And then they walked by. Job interviews. I had wonderful job interviews, but I got feedback. "People, you made such a mess of it. What have you done?" And that became more and more and more. And I got feedback in emails and other people walking by about conversations they could never have heard. So you get paranoid. You get totally paranoid at a certain moment. And then in the year...
That's what they call gaslighting, right?
Yeah, they call gaslighting, yeah. So it's a slow build-up, and then that exploded in 1 week in the year 2000, and that week started with gunshots close to my house and people walking around saying, "He can never get out." And when I wanted to call, my mobile phone was not working. When I wanted to internet, my internet was not working. When I wanted to go to the police and report this, suddenly the whole police station was filled with, well, maybe 100 people. and it ended on a Friday of that week, where I was in a very strange situation where a car in front of me had a big accident on the highway. It's a long story, but... And I managed to it's a miracle that I managed to pass by. And immediately I called 911. And when I must have been the first one who called 911. I was behind this car. And when I connected to 911, they said, "Oh, yeah, we know already this already for a long time of this accident." And then I came at my work, the client where I was working for then. And he said, "Peter, look, we just received a nice email." And that was an email with all photos of car accidents with people dead and blood everywhere. And then I was almost, and from that moment on, it was 24 hours a day, the whole day. Yeah. Well, and so,
now, going back to when this started, you said you left a job and they didn't want you to leave that job. Was this some kind of national security classification kind of job, or what? Now, why would they go after you for leaving a job?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, this was a company. I was asked to start this company with two other people. So I was a technical director, and then there was a sales director and a CEO. And there was a lot of money available. It was initiated by one of the richest people in the Netherlands. So after a few months, we were in a big building with 35 employees, etc. There was also an American guy working for that company. And one day something about the CIA was on the news, and we were just joking about it. CIA, yeah, funny. But then he told me this story that he had a friend working for the NSA, and that he asked his friend, how can I contact you? And his friend said, well, you just pick up a phone, any phone, and you shout my name and I will pick it up on the other side. So, and he was just joking about it. So after some time, you start thinking back, and well, this was an IT outsourcing company, so it should do the manage the infrastructure, IT infrastructure of other companies. So I just think this was a Secret Services, NSA, CIA, Dutch Secret Service company that was being set up. And I think that they may have thought that this Peter maybe knew too much. I'm not really going play golf with those people. Yeah, I have my own mind and I want to do my own thing. So I think that was the reason that they thought, well, maybe he knows too much. I don't know. Something like that. Yeah.
Very interesting. Wow. Well, some of the people I've talked to, such as Seth Farber's patients, didn't seem to really know why they'd been targeted. And so you say there are also some people who maybe just are being experimented on kind of randomly?
Yeah. Well, I mean, most people... There are many people are targeted, like I told you in the beginning. I once made an estimate for the Netherlands. There are 15, 16 million people here. And as a minimum, I estimated that every year, 350 new people will be targeted. But of these people, only a few survive. Most do not understand. I think most will think that they have been hit by bad luck in their life. They go to doctors, go to psychiatrists, and you will never hear of them again. So only a very few of these people actually survive and start looking into this. And then after some time, a number even put their stories on the internet.
Yeah, I've known some people in the 9/11 Truth Movement who've had these problems. Byron Belitzos, for example, has reported that in the early days of the 9/11 Truth Movement in California, there were white vans that would show up outside people's houses or apartments. Mike Rupert has also discussed this. Apparently, suddenly, you know, the people would become very, very ill in the houses. They would have to leave. And Byron also thinks that there were means used that were not using kind of conventional technologies. What he was describing sounds almost like some kind of psychic technology or some form of energy technology that's not in, you know, conventional science that they teach in the universities. I had Byron on the show talking about that too once. Have you heard of anything like that? That there are forms of covert harassment that maybe you're not using normal electronics?
Well, that's very difficult. I mean, of course, I've been to university and studied electronics and all these things, and I'm pretty sure that I have not learned everything there is to know. For example, all this Tesla technology, if you read the book of Angels Don't Play That Harp, the book of Nick Begich, then you realize that you only got part of the story. But I also believe that... many of these weapons are just frequency based, and well, you can be in a room with a mobile phone. You can make a phone call, so the mobile phone is working in this room, so the frequencies go through the wall, and that's nice. I mean, that you can call inside your home with a mobile phone, but it also means that other people can put these frequencies through the wall and aim at you. So you are, in fact, not safe. You can no longer say to your children, to your loved ones, stay in this room, then you are safe. The rooms of your home do not offer any protection against these weapons.
That's an unfortunate situation there. And some of these people apparently feel like they really have nowhere to hide, and you can understand why.
Yeah, there is no way to hide. I mean, you can go into your home, you can go into the smallest room, but you are attacked everywhere you go, in every room. When you walk out in the street, you are attacked. I mean, they have vans, they can do it from the sky, from aircraft, maybe satellite, I don't know. When you are in the shop, I mean, this technology is really everywhere, and has been made such that it's quite easy to attack you, to attack people. So they can attack your body almost everywhere. And when you are a target, you can, many targets, they're just burned or cooked out of their homes. It's really horrible. And then there's a phase in their lives when they start realizing that this will not go away, that they cannot hide. And then they are starting to becoming a person who's living with torture, 24 hours torture. Yeah. And once you have entered that situation, then all kinds of experiments are being performed on you. Yeah, they must look at if certain intensities and certain frequencies, what is the effect on your body, what is the effect on your mind. And that's what they do to targeted individuals.
Huh. Interesting.
It's torture and experimentation. Huh.
Yeah. And if this is the case, though, if they can sort of target people and follow them wherever they go from satellites, things like that, it would suggest that you would really think that basically anybody who was causing problems for those who have this power, this control over this technology, would be likely to be targeted. And yet, don't we have a world in which there are all sorts of people out there fighting the power and causing problems for all of the various powerful people? Or is that an illusion? Or is everybody who even threatens to really cause them a problem taken out quickly?
I think everybody who's really hitting the truth will be taken out. That's certainly true. And these weapons, based on radio waves, are perfect tools to do that. I mean, they can give you a heart attack in your home. They can give you a heart attack when you're on the bicycle, when you're running. There was a number of years ago when Sarkozy was president of France. He said something which was bad for the United States, and Sarkozy did always running. And a few days later, he suddenly was hit by some heart attack. He fell down on the ground when he was running, and he was taken to a hospital, but they couldn't find anything. I mean, this is all, it has become so easy to eliminate or incapacitate, maybe just for a short time, people. With these weapons are wonder weapons, you can say.
Interesting. Justin Raimondo of antiwar.com broke the story right after 9/11 of Israeli involvement with the alleged 9/11 hijackers and how a huge Israeli spy ring, biggest espionage operation against the United States inside the U.S. in all history, had gotten rolled up right before 9/11. Hundreds and hundreds of Israeli spies rolled up. Some of these people had been all over the alleged hijackers. So Raimondo broke that story, and it was getting some attention, and suddenly he got a heart attack, I think while he was working out in the gym. And after he recovered, he never went back to that topic. Just one example. And there probably are others. I'm sure, Hugo Chavez and a lot of other anti-empire Latin American leaders all came down with cancer at pretty much the same time. It really does make you wonder.
Yeah, it's also with all these bankers at a certain moment. There were many bankers suddenly found dead with heart attacks, or they had hung themselves. Also amazing. These weapons are, I mean, you can attack people through wall. And it's not only their body, Kevin, you can attack. You can also attack their minds. I mean, what you can do nothing against it. I can tell you this. It's really, they take you down on the floor with horrible pain, in 30 seconds, and then you will call 911 and they will come and take you to a hospital, while in fact there's nothing wrong with you. So Yeah, this is something that's not only affecting the targeted individuals. I mean, they are just the people who are experimented upon and used to develop and refine these weaponry. But it's also a problem, in fact, of, well, what you call what's left of democracy. I mean, and anybody who speaks out against government or against big companies or whatever, they will be targeted. And in the past, you would be targeted with maybe chemicals, with drugs. They would poison you. But today, they just point these weapons at you. They put a truck outside. They point these weapons at you, and it's finished.
You know, I wonder if there are psychological weapons that can induce kinds of sort of obsession or, you know, paranoia. I've seen here in Wisconsin, there are three people I can think of who are all really good 9/11 truth activists who acted at certain points as if they had been hit by some sort of, you know, crazy pill electronic weapon to make them totally obsessive about the work of Judy Wood. Now, Judy Wood is the researcher who's hypothesized that the World Trade Center was taken out by some kind of exotic weapon that dustified the tower, some kind of energy weapon. And it is very interesting work. But I've seen these three individuals, all of whom were very effective 9/11 truth activists at one point, be largely, you know, rendered ineffective or much less effective than they otherwise would have been by all becoming just rabidly, maniacally, crazily focused on Judy Wood's work and becoming very, very, very angry at people who had put forth other interpretations of how the World Trade Center was destroyed. These people, you know, they believed that these other people who had a different view of how the World Trade Center was destroyed were, you know, bad people working for the CIA and spreading disinformation and stuff. And these people became very, very fearful, very, very angry, very, very obsessed, all obsessed in exactly the same way, in favor of Judy Wood's work and against everybody else proposing other viewpoints. And, you know, you have to wonder whether somehow, you know, the ability to implant a thought and then to induce a state of mind where that thought becomes obsessive and kind of aggressive, you know, in an aggressive, paranoid kind of way, could be used. And this would be a very effective weapon against a social movement. So, you know, just three of the very most effective 9/11 activists in the state of Wisconsin, all completely taken out of action or greatly reduced in their effectiveness by this Judy Wood mania. You know, multiply that by the rest of the USA and the world and maybe other situations, other forms of mania, people being hit with, you know, other thoughts to be obsessive about and other, you know, emotionally crippling kinds of, you know, manipulations. And you could see how if there were a social movement that really had to be stopped and they wanted to stop it in a deniable way, you know, they didn't want too many people dropping dead. That's too obvious. Make it destroy itself from within. You know, this kind of approach would seem to be a very, very logical approach for those who are trying to stop the social movement.
Yeah, it's certainly true that these weapons, so we talk mainly about that these weapons attack the human body, but these weapons also can attack the human brain, and that's even more dangerous, because how do you know your brain is attacked? You can... At this moment, you can change moods of a person. So you can make a person aggressive. You can make a person blank out. You can make a person angry, and you can also force thoughts into the brain. This is not like the hearing voices that some TIs, targeted individuals, talk about, but it's a thought that is forced into your brain, and if you respond to this thought, then you are, of course, just nothing more than a robot. You're just being programmed to do the things that the programmers want. It's extremely dangerous technology. And well, in my way, if we do not stop this, I mean, they're now doing this just to target individuals and probably a few other people who they want to control. But you can roll out this technology to the whole population. And at a certain moment, you just say, okay, now everybody is happy today and nobody's thinking about bad things anymore.
Yeah, so some days I look around and it looks like somebody's already done that.
but can you imagine? I mean, I know this from my, also from my own experience. I've experienced this myself, and but it's really weird. I mean, this thought is forced into you, and then it keeps repeating until you respond. I have for myself this well, you can say this kind of minimal protection against all these attacks that I never try to respond immediately. So when something is done to me, when I get a thought, when I get a phone call, I never respond immediately. I try to respond in a random fashion. So I mix up my responses. And but if you respond immediately or almost immediately, then they've put a new thought into you. They create a new environment for you. They send you a new email. And that's the way how they can quite easily control people. And if you don't notice that they can do this, then I tell you, you're nothing more than a robot.
Now, I would think that meditation might be a good antidote to this, because when you meditate, you kind of reach, you let your mind kind of go blank, and you sink into a very relaxed and peaceful state. And as you do that, you notice your thoughts sort of bubbling up, and you're trying to just kind of let go of all those thoughts. Whether you're doing like the Zen type of meditation where you're just trying to be there without any thoughts, or whether you're doing the Sufi meditation that I mainly do, which involves repeating divine formulas, either way, you're letting go of all of your thoughts and emptying out. And letting, God or the light of the void or whatever you want to call it, fill you up. So as you let your thoughts go, you become aware that these thoughts are sort of bubbling up in you, almost as if they're coming from somewhere else. Like each thought that you have, you tend to identify with your thoughts. You think, oh, this is me. You have a thought and, your ego identifies with it. Or if it's a thought that's unacceptable to you, your ego sort of rejects it and pushes it away. And, Freud would say pushes it into the unconscious. But when you're meditating, you learn to observe these thoughts and just kind of get some detachment from them. Just let them bubble up and then let go of them so that the bubbling will slowly cease. And I would think that that process would be useful not only for getting this kind of non-attachment from ordinary thoughts that bubble up, but also from any kind of thoughts that were being implanted in you.
Yeah, well, I certainly think that's very good to do. I mean, you have this, when you're a spiritual person, most people think what they are thinking. So that's what they do. So that's very good. But I mean, you know that, and I know that, but there are many people who don't meditate, and just follow the thoughts in their heads. And the situation gets even more worse, because when you're a younger person, I mean, when you're a little bit older, you have more experience, you know how your thought process works a little bit. But when you're younger, maybe between 20 and 30, you do not have this experience yet. So how can you compare with situations earlier in your life? How can you know how your thought process exactly is working? So that's very difficult. But yeah, you can, if you like you do this meditation, and many spiritual people, they think about what they're thinking, and that's of course very good. Yeah, but still, it remains extremely difficult to distinguish what thought is your own thought.
Well, it's that who is this me that's supposedly doing the thinking or not doing the thinking?
Yeah.
Well, how about the possibility that some of the crazy political behavior that we see is driven by this? For example, we know that Al-Qaeda had 15% approval ratings across the Muslim world, which is kind of shocking because most Muslims support kicking out the American imperialists. Most Muslims support kicking out the Zionists. Most Muslims support bringing the whole Islamic world together into one supranational entity, call it a caliphate or whatever you want to call it. And these are the ostensible goals of Al-Qaeda. But yet, only 15% of Muslims supported Al-Qaeda at the peak, according to international polls. The reason for that primarily is that Al-Qaeda was ambivalent about targeting civilians. That is, sometimes they would say things that made it sound like they thought it was okay to kill civilians. And indeed, they did kill a lot of civilians, or at least approved of various killings of civilians. And most Muslims don't agree with that. That's not in Islam. There's a strong rule against harming civilians. So Al-Qaeda got only 15% approval at its height. And the successor or the spinoff from Al-Qaeda, this so-called Islamic State, Daesh or ISIS, whatever you want to call it, is even less popular among Muslims than Al-Qaeda was. You know, they're giving Islam a terrible image with these insane kinds of, you know, beheadings. I mean, some of them seem to be Hollywood soundstage beheadings, but there's plenty of real atrocity going on in these ISIS areas. And so the question would be, why would there be these young people? There are, you know, not a lot, but there are these little, you know, scattering pockets or handfuls of young people around the world, these from Islamic backgrounds, who suddenly develop some kind of obsession with running off and joining the Islamic State. And we know that there's a terror factory that is producing these huge numbers of fake terrorists. In the United States, I think Aronson, who wrote the book The Terror Factory, showed that virtually all of, I think it was 600-700 people who've been charged with terror offenses in the U.S. since 9/11. Virtually all of those people were entrapped. The FBI created the plot and had a master manipulator manipulate a vulnerable, helpless, and harmless person into going along with the FBI plot, and then they swooped in and nailed their so-called terrorist. So I wonder whether these people who are becoming either, you know, terrorists, you know, they're usually like alcohol, drug addicts, and you know, from Muslim backgrounds, or maybe they become a Muslim convert, you know, 2 seconds before they do their crime, you know, like the guy in Ottawa. I wonder if these people and the younger people who rush off to join ISIS are being targeted. If this thought is being implanted in their brains to go join ISIS, and you know, because I can't understand why else they would. I mean, it's so obvious that ISIS is a tool of the forces that are waging a war against Islam. It would make no sense. But as you said, teenagers and young people are very, you know, kind of vulnerable. They haven't had enough experience to be able to weigh things and to get, you know, separate their own thoughts from other people's thoughts. So do you think that there might be some of this kind of targeting going on?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. Yeah, I certainly think so, that these things are also going on in these communities. There was a research project. It was revealed by a whistleblower and an activist post, the website published this, that there was a research project on an American university, and what they were researching there was to plant these thoughts into groups of people and also to avoid certain thoughts that people would think of. So this is really taking off, and it's not only being done on just a few people, but they can do this just on groups of people. And of course, they use all these other methods like sending around emails, and so that you get into a certain state, which they also did, of course, in the past. But with this electronic weaponry, with this mind control, because it's really your mind is controlled, it becomes much more easy. These young people, they have no reference, so they will just think, I must do it, because that's the thought they plant into your head. It's not a voice, it's a thought.
That's awful.
yeah.
How about the possibility, if you say they're working in groups of people and they're trying to get people to not only have a thought, but maybe to avoid a thought? I have to wonder whether there's been some kind of subliminal mind control program that has induced avoidance behavior regarding the, you know, questions raised about what happened on 9/11. Because sure, you know, you can say that that's partly because of normal natural psychological factors, that 50% or so of the American people were given clinical post-traumatic stress disorder by the images they saw on their television on September 11th, 2001, and that this immense trauma has led to people not wanting to go there and feel even more trauma when they face the obvious fact that it was an inside job. But it is so obvious. The evidence is just so obvious. You know, anyone with the slightest shred of critical thinking skills who spends 5 minutes, you know, looking at a, you know, like a video on Building 7, you know, like WT7, the smoking gun, for example, that 3-minute video produced by Colonel Bob Bowman. You know, anybody, you know, a fifth grader can look at these things and see it. But for some reason, you talk to people about it, and so many people have this, just they go, you know, they go red in the face, they get excited, they get nervous, you can see the adrenaline pumping, they get hostile, they get aggressive, they withdraw, they're, you know, exhibiting this kind of almost Pavlovian avoidance behavior. And even though you could explain part of this through sort of normal psychological means, like Fran Schur has explained in her essays about this topic at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, you still have to wonder whether there's something extra there, because it's so extreme, it's so puzzling. Now, Gordon Duff over at Veterans Today has told me that everybody who has a cell phone has been manipulated subliminally post 9/11. He didn't come right out and say that that's what it was the, you know, the big program was to induce 9/11 truth avoidance behavior. But one could hypothesize that that has been done. Do you think it has been, or am I maybe just paranoid?
I don't know about if they have been using cell phones to put certain messages to people. I totally agree with the 9/11 truth. It should come out. It's, the evidence is so clear. But I think also I've been doing some research on how people, what people can accept. And it appears that people in general cannot accept what is too much far away from them. If it's too far away from them, then they get panicking. They go panicking. It's like you say, they get red. Because if they would accept that, then everything they have ever learned and believed in, they would have to readjust. And I think that's also a very important factor. I mean, we have all, since our birth, we have been programmed. We thought that we live in a democracy. We've been told that you can choose politicians and that these politicians will represent you. We have been taught this, and it's been banged into our heads. It has been banked into our heads that when you go to the police will help you, that the government is doing good things. But that's just programming. We have been programmed. And when you go a little bit out of that, then most people cannot accept that. The brain cannot accept it. And that's really a problem. For me myself, when I got into this whole situation, I had to deprogram myself. I don't know for you, but I had to deprogram myself. So, okay, the police is not going to protect me. The government is not going to help me. Democracy does not exist. The rule of law is only for certain people. But these are big steps you take in your life. This is big. And all these people, in fact, many people should do this, but they don't. And I don't know if you can blame them for this.
That's true. Yeah, I suppose the red pill may have some downsides compared to the blue pill.
Yeah.
So
some people like eat steak on Sunday. Yeah.
Right. Where's I going to go here? I was wondering about the empirical evidence that this is going on. You know, like with 9/11, as I mentioned, you could show any reasonable person that 3-minute video made by Colonel Bob Bowman called WTC-7, the smoking gun. And it shows you the obvious controlled demolition of Building 7. It shows you the overinsured landlord of 2 months, Larry Silverstein, confessing to the demolition. It shows you the BBC reporting that the building has come down 20 minutes before it did, showing obvious scripting and foreknowledge. And in that 3 minutes, the person will then have the choice of either, you know, facing reality or taking that blue pill and refusing to believe the obvious truth and, you know, going back to their life, because it's very simple, in-your-face, obvious empirical evidence. Now, with this issue of electronic harassment, gang stalking, you know, if all we do, we hear people who've had it done to them, that's probably not going to convince everybody, because this is an even more disturbing thing in many ways. And, it, you know, if you can't bring some kind of really hard empirical evidence that can be, you know, digested in a reasonable time frame, I wonder, you know, how easy it's going to be to convince people this is a serious problem. So the question is, aside from all of these victims who've talked about this, do we have, you know, hard evidence in terms of do we know who's doing it, where they're doing it? How do we know that? Are there accounts from insiders who've been involved in creating and deploying these weapons? What's the evidence that we can bring to the table to convince people that this is going on?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, and then very difficult. This is one of the most difficult things there is for the people who are being targeted. When you are being shot with a gun, you have a bullet wound. When somebody stabs you with a knife, you have a wound. When you're beating up, I mean, it shows. But when you radiate it with frequency weapons, it doesn't show.
Well, sometimes it does. I got a full body sunburn once after a military style plane flew 200 feet overhead right after I had talked to Senator Barbara Boxer and gotten her to basically say that she, you know, didn't believe the 9/11 Commission report and supported 9/11 truth. Huge problem there. And so right after I talked to Senator Boxer on Wisconsin Public Radio, just, you know, that not that long after a military or some kind of, it was a twin engine jet flew very low, very slow and very silently over me as I was leaving my house. And I felt a pulse of electricity go through my body. My dog also freaked out as this plane went overhead. Obviously, he was hit with it too. We managed to get in the car, drive back to the university. You know, drove an hour to the University of Wisconsin. I taught my class, not very well because I was so dazed. Went home and collapsed in the bed. And then when my wife got home, she said, "Oh, what happened to the dog? He looks like he's dying." And indeed, our dog was you know, in very bad shape. I couldn't get out of it. I felt like, you know, back in the days when I used to drink a couple of decades ago, this felt like much worse than the worst hangover I'd ever had. And I was in bed for about 48 hours, couldn't move. And I had a full body extreme sunburn. When I discussed this with Doug Rocky, the U.S. Army colonel who led the DU project in Iraq, and then became a whistleblower, he said, "Oh yeah, they zapped you." He said, "We used to play with those up at Fort McCoy when I was in special forces training. We used to zap each other for fun. We got plane mounted, we got truck mounted, we got hand carried." So, and I had one other experience where I may have been hit with the same thing, where I got a full body sunburn. So, some of these things may actually leave a trace.
Yeah, they leave a trace, but when you get a burn or a spot, and then, okay, what can you do? I mean, I once had this, and I went to the police, and the police said, "Well, Peter, go to the hospital, go to see a dermatologist." So the police has totally no instructions to act upon any attacks with these frequency-based weapons. And we know there are laser weapons. I mean, when you have a laser pen to point something on the wall, on the board, I mean, if you make this a little bit stronger, you can also get them in an invisible light. You can attack people. You can buy lasers, commercial lasers. Everybody can buy them for $300. And you can really attack a person in a terrible way. If you do this very fast, then it will not leave any spot. The problem is, when you go to the police and you tell them, then they will say you're paranoid, or go to see a dermatologist, or go see a doctor, because, and then after a few days probably this spot will go away. So there is no system, there is nothing implemented that can help the people who are attacked with these weapons. In fact, the politicians should make new laws and make new units to fight this abuse. In the US, almost everyone has a weapon, I believe. So now what would happen if everyone would have a laser weapon? that would certainly make the situation extremely difficult.
Yeah, that's a scary thought. Yeah. But if laser weapons are outlawed, only outlaws will have laser weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah, what kind of world are we creating for ourselves, people? This is getting out of hand.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But the situation is quite alarming. I mean, like I told you, now they're doing this on the targeted individuals mainly, and of course they take out whistleblowers and activists, opponents of big companies. But these weapons are being used, and they're being rolled out, in fact, you can say, I think, to larger groups of people, to maybe populations of cities soon. And they don't need any weapons, conventional weapons, to control the people. They just use these mind control weapons.
You know, it does raise a tough question for people who've had this kind of experience, like the one I described that I had in 2005. At the time, I didn't talk about it because, you know, I talked about it with Doug Rocky because he, you know, he knew about those weapons. He played with them when he was in Special Forces. But I didn't go public with it right away because it seemed like the downside would be greater than any possible benefit. It's, you know, if I suddenly, you know, went to the newspapers and said, hey, look, I got a full body sunburn after this military plane flew overhead, they would say, look, this 9/11 truth activist is completely paranoid. And this is an example of how these kinds of things, like, and gaslighting as well, you know, which is making people think they're crazy by doing these weird things to them. This is very insidious because the more you try to stop it by being transparent and talking openly about it, the worse it makes you look. You look like a tinfoil hat, paranoid conspiracy nut. Gordon Duff has, you know, described this as, he said, oh yeah, this, he says, this is the cat kidnapping scenario. You know, we always joked about this, you know, in the CIA. They say, what's that, Gordon? He said, well, you know, if you want to go after somebody, what you do is you land a black helicopter on their lawn. And then you got, you know, four guys jump out of the black helicopter, all dressed in black ninja outfits and ski masks. And they kick in the door. And they charge past you. You're sitting there in the living room freaking out, and they just ignore you, and they grab your cat. They take your cat out to the helicopter, and they fly away. And so now, if you were to call the newspaper or the police and say, these guys in black ninja outfits in a black helicopter just landed on my lawn and came in and took my cat, nobody's ever going to believe anything you say again. So that's one of the problems here. How do we discuss this rationally and transparently?
That's a big problem for the people who are targeted. I mean, when you go to police, they will say go to a doctor, and when you go to a doctor, he will say go to a psychiatrist. So many people that have been contacting me because I started the Dystopic Foundation in 2007, and I'm called from people all over the world, and so many people. I mean, you've been targeted maybe just once or twice or three times, but these people are targeted 24 hours a day. So they look for something, some help, please. And they end up, many end up in psychiatry. I mean, they go to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist take the DSM-5. It was 4, but now it's 5. And they label you paranoid schizophrenic. That's the way it is. So you must be extremely careful to talk about this, and especially for people who are targeted 24 hours a day, it's true what they say. They are burned, cooked. They hear they get voices into their head who say, kill yourself, kill yourself. And this is going on the whole day. So it is difficult for them to talk in a rational way about this problem.
Getting back to that question of you know, the evidence that's going on, who, you know, who's doing it, and, you know, is it a freelance underground thing where it's sort of like almost like the mafia and the fringes of the intelligence community that's doing this, or are there more official entities that are doing it?
Yeah, I think it's very, very official entities who are doing this. This is the military connected to secret services, to NATO, and then in other parts of the world, I really don't know, because they're also doing it in China and in Thailand and India. The fact that I mean, this can only be true this way, because it's so hidden that nobody talks about it. It's really extremely hidden. On the COVID harassment conference, there's also a person, a speaker. He will not come because he is injured. We also invited him last year. He also was injured. Then suddenly he got a car accident. His name is Carl Clark, and he's a whistleblower. He has been attacking people in the past. And he said that there were also these groups of people attacking people with these frequency weapons, but he was not really in contact with them. Yeah. So this is all very separated. You cannot go on the internet and buy these weapons. Everything is taken off the internet. Everything is controlled.
Hmm. Wow. So what would be the best strategy for getting this under control? How can we deal with this? You've got an organization, you know, we're having a conference. I know there have been some efforts in the European Parliament. Is the ultimate way to go the legal route and get official investigations and get some kind of legal response?
Well, the legal response, I don't know at this moment. At this moment, I think it's very important to expose this. Unfortunately, the internet is still free. Well, not really free, but a little bit free. So we can still put information on the internet, credible things on the internet. And with this information, we can unite people. I mean, the conference is very much about uniting targeted individuals, uniting the people who are victims of these crimes. Because as an individual, you are denied, you are ignored, your rights are denied. So when we are a group of people, it becomes much more difficult to ignore us. And then we can go to the European government, and then we can go to the media. I know of people who send an email, for example, to a politician, a political party in the Netherlands, and they got a response from, okay, yeah, thank you. If there are more people contacting us, then we will look into it. So we must group, we must unite together. The people, the victims of these crimes must unite together and make a statement. And only then I think that we can make a next step. In the meantime, I believe that this problem is now, this weaponry has so far advanced, and the TIs, the targeted individuals, know this from their own experience. And like I told you, they now can control your mind quite good. They can control your body. The human body and brain have been decoded the last decades. The problem is not only the targeted individuals, but the problem is becoming a problem for humanity as a whole. Because very soon they roll out this technology. They just put up new antennas. They put these balloons, the Google Wi-Fi balloons, into the sky. And they can control, with these electromagnetic waves, they can control the minds of large groups of people.
And traditionally, new forms of weaponry that were extremely harmful had potential to kind of, you know, really just wreak havoc, would often not get fully used or not used at all, because each side would say, well, you know, if we were to use this, the other side would use it too. You know, with nuclear weapons, they've only officially been used twice. Certainly only the really big super megaton types have been used, you know, in Japan. There may have been many nukes used elsewhere, but there's that threshold where, you know, there are these different entities, and if one entity starts using a weaponry system, then the other side might too. Where the in World War II, I believe, the nerve gas was held back, and so on and so forth. One would hope that there might be a situation like that here, where, just like with the Biological Weapons Treaty, which of course may be more respected in the breach than in the observance, but one would hope that the various nations would organize to ban these weapons, because if the other side uses them, you know, what kind of defense will there be? But then, of course, the problem becomes one of verification and keeping track of, you know, who's developing these weapons, who's deploying them, and so on. Could there ultimately be an arms control regime that would apply to these weapons?
Yeah, well, I think there should be, because if we don't control these weapons, then, I it's my opinion, then it's the end of humanity as we know it. I mean, if nobody is free in his mind, if they can read your ideas, they can tap into your mind and know what you're going to do, know all your secrets. I mean, what's a human about then any longer? So I think we must ban these weapons must be banned, and they must be banned as soon as possible, but it's very difficult because they leave no evidence. Nuclear weapons leave evidence, chemical weapons leave evidence, but they can do this. They've been doing this now for maybe, I know of victims who've been targeted with these weapons for over 25 years, and it's going on, and nobody is talking about it. No government is talking about it. No agency is talking about it. Human rights organizations like Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, they don't talk about it. When a targeted individual goes to such an organization, they say it's not our type of torture. Yeah, they only want the visible torture. Yeah, so it's not our type of torture. That's what they say. Well, these organizations should really look into this, because it may be I from my own personal experience and from the experience of so many people who have called me. I can say that these crimes certainly belong to the most serious crimes ever committed in history.
Okay, well, that's a good place to leave it. Thank you, Peter Mooring. I appreciate your work, and I look forward to joining you at the Covert Harassment Conference in Berlin. It's coming up at the beginning of October, and people can find out more about that at covertharassmentconference.com. No dashes or underlines or anything, just all run together, covertharassmentconference.com. And there's also stopeg.com. So thank you, Peter Mooring. I look forward to meeting you in person. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Kevin, for having me.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to meet you in Berlin as well.
All right. See you there.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.